First of all, I would like to thank very much the organizers for inviting me to the Fields Institute. And my talk is, in a way, a sequel of Reinhardt's talk, because it's another strange application of kinetic theory, although in my talk, application means something very different from your talk. So I want to use the Vlasov equation as a matter model in general relativity, and sort of want to convince you that it's a very good matter model in a certain sense. And to do so, I want to start with a brief motivation, just recalling some well-known predictions from general relativity. So one of them is, of course, that under certain situations you can have space-time singularities forming if matter collapses, which means you have sort of places in space-time where curvature blows up and where the geometry of space breaks down. These are usually surrounded by black holes out of which no signals, no light can escape. And on the cosmological scale, one well-known prediction of this theory, of course, is that you can have cosmologies, models for the universe, which have a beginning, a big bang, and which possibly have an end. And if you think just of the words black hole or big bang, they really made it into almost everyday language. So these predictions of general relativity have been very influential to our view of the universe, although they are of no practical importance yet, I would say. And probably never will be, I don't know. But if you look at it, it's sort of surprising that these rather far-reaching predictions are based on just very few and very special solutions of Einstein's field equations. So I've written down a couple here, like the Schwarzschild solution, which is static, vacuum, and spherically symmetric. So this is very special, but it exhibits these space-time singularities. Or the Oppenheimer-Snyder solution, which I will explain on my next transparency in more detail. Or these cosmological models, which go by the names of Robertson, Walker, Friedman, which are homogeneous and isotropic spatially. So they are very special, very high symmetry, and these predictions are based on these very few, very special solutions in a way. So questions that one may ask then is, well, are these singularities in some way typical in the sense that they also occur if you don't have this high degree of symmetry? And a more specific question is whether the so-called cosmic censorship conjecture holds. I will also explain what this means on the next transparency in connection with this Oppenheimer-Snyder solution. And what I claim is that to deal with these questions, you have to be very careful what you pick as your matter model. I mean, the Einstein field equations by themselves are not enough. You have to do something to describe the matter in the universe, and the equations which you pick will really influence to a high degree what sort of predictions you get here. So, to say something about these, about cosmic censorship, I have just basically drawn a little picture here. So this sort of standard picture for gravitational collapse is based on a solution for the Einstein field equations found by Oppenheimer and Snyder in 1939. This Oppenheimer is the Los Alamos Oppenheimer, so he also did something useful in his life. And this is ambiguous, of course. I mean this, okay. Pardon? Yes, no, I mean, forgive me the remark, okay. And the matter that they take as a model is a homogeneous, spherically symmetric ball of dust, where dust, by definition, is an ideal fluid with pressure zero. So this dust is a matter model which is very often used in relativity simply because it's easy to deal with, not because it's so well motivated from physics, but it's very easy to deal with. And so what you find if you make this, if you do this, well, here you have initially this distribution, the spherically symmetric matter distribution. It's arranged in such a way that initially all these dust particles are at rest, and then, of course, they start to collapse due to gravity. Since there's no pressure in this model, nothing is going to stop this collapse. And at some point, a surface starts to form here, which grows, and eventually all the matter is within that surface. And this surface, which is, I mean, usually called the event horizon, is distinguished by the fact that if you look at the forward light cones, these things here, which are the directions of light moving towards the future, then as you go nearer to this mass distribution, they sort of tip towards the mass until they are tipped so far that even a particle which tries to go radially out, a light ray, doesn't really go out, but just kind of goes along the surface. So this is the standard picture. And within this event horizon, the matter continues to collapse until eventually here the curvature of the geometry breaks down and curvature blows up. Now, the important thing in this picture is that you have this space-time singularity where you wouldn't know how to do physics really at that point, but it doesn't bother you too much because there's this event horizon around it. So if you're an observer sitting out here, you simply cannot see that thing, and so you can forget about it. It doesn't affect the physics outside. So this is the message of this picture. You have such a space-time singularity developing out of regular initial data, but fortunately it's hidden behind this event horizon. So essentially you don't need to bother with it. And now just suppose for a moment that there wouldn't be this event horizon, so that there would be some sort of hole in here where a light ray can get out. Then if you're an observer out here who sees that light ray, well, what that observer will see cannot be predicted by prescribing initial data down here, because by definition of singularity, you cannot follow that light ray through the singularity. That's by definition of singularity. So if you would have a singularity which is not surrounded by such an event horizon, such a thing would be called a naked singularity, that would violate causality, which of course you don't want to have in a deterministic theory like this. And so therefore the physicists have invented the cosmic sensor, which just says this is forbidden, okay? No naked singularities. Any singularity which occurs in this way is always hidden behind an event horizon. That's an hypothesis that this is true. I mean, and unfortunately, it's not true, it's false. Christodoulou in 84 showed that if you take, again, this dust as a matter model, and you take spherically symmetric data in a particular way, which may be arbitrarily small, then you're going to get singularities, and they may be naked. Okay, so even, I mean, there's no size restriction even which would prevent this. So this cosmic censorship does not hold in full generality. For this matter model, for dust, it's just false. Now, what I propose to do in this talk is use a different matter model, namely the Vlasov equation, and see what happens then. Pardon? Spherically symmetric. Yes, I mean, it's written here, right? Well, the difference is that this event, that in Christodoulou's result, the data are prepared in such a way that before this event horizon really forms, a light ray escapes from the singularity out to spatial infinity. And that violates cosmic censorship. It's really a light ray coming out of, I mean, the singularity sort of forms before you have the event horizon around it, and the light ray can get off to spatial infinity. So then the singularity is not covered by this event horizon, and you don't know what an observer will really observe. He observes that light ray. It's not determined by the initial data. Geometrically speaking, the space-time is not globally hyperbolic. You cannot follow every causal curve down to the initial hypersurface. Yes, it's not homogeneous anymore. It's prepared in, it has a certain profile so that everything works out in the way he wants it to. Yes. So asymptotic. Yeah, these are asymptotically flat. They are spherically symmetric and asymptotically flat. No, they are spherically symmetric everywhere. They're spherically symmetric. I don't understand the question. I mean, these are spherically symmetric in the sense that they are invariant under actions of the SO3. The SO3 acts as an isometry group on the space-time, and they are asymptotically flat in the sense that if you take the radial coordinate, then the metric goes to Minkowski. The radial coordinate goes to infinity. Yeah, I mean, surely you can make more general ones, but this is like I said. So are there any more questions about this? Okay, now to couple this with this with the Vlasov equation, I now have to go into some formulas. So we have a four-dimensional manifold, space-time manifold, or actually this is what we want to construct as part of the solution. And on this thing, Lorentz metric G alpha beta is the unknown, one of the unknowns. These Greek indices always run from 0 to 3 in my talk. And then we can introduce local coordinates on the tangent bundle of that manifold. So the P alphas are to be thought of as canonical momenta corresponding to these coordinates X alpha. And now I want to describe an ensemble of particles moving on that space-time manifold. And as usual, I want to normalize the rest mass to 1. So this means that the particles will have coordinates sitting on the so-called mass shell. This condition here just means that the rest mass of the particle is equal to 1. And P naught being positive means that if I think of X naught as the time-like variable, that the particles move towards the future. So this submanifold of the tangent bundle is invariant under the geodesic flow, which means, I have written the geodesic equations, which are of course the equations of motion for a test particle on such a space-time. And if such a test particle starts on this manifold, then it stays there. So the rest mass is conserved, and if a particle moves towards the future at some instant, it's going to continue to move towards the future and not to turn. Gammas are, of course, the Christoffel symbols computed from the G, so they are first-order differential objects in the G, and the precise form is not necessary to tell you here. Okay, so we have these geodesics, and now we look at a number density for an ensemble of particles, which is now living on this mass shell PM. So on this mass shell, I can introduce new coordinates. I mean, not really new coordinates, I simply drop the P0 because I think of this equation as determining the P0 in terms of the other coordinates. And so I'm now on a seven-dimensional submanifold coordinatized by these coordinates here, and F is depending on them. Of course, it should be non-negative. And if it satisfies, if this is the number density of a collisionless ensemble of particles, I mean, this is the assumption for Vlasov, then it will satisfy this first-order conservation law, which is obtained simply by saying I want these to be the characteristic system for my Vlasov equation. And I have divided by the P naught here, which would originally be here, right? So this is the Vlasov equation in this context. So up to this point, the metric is thought of as given, and then this is the Vlasov equation in this given background metric. But of course, we want to couple this. So this is done by the field equation now, which is obeyed by these metric components. So the capital G is obtained by the Christoffel symbols by again taking first order derivatives and doing very complicated algebraic manipulations. So this is a second order differential object, very nonlinear in terms of this metric here. And the right hand side is the energy momentum tensor, which for such a Vlasov matter is obtained by this expression here, where the modulus of G is actually the determinant of the metric. So of course that comes in if you integrate, because the metric is used to measure volumes, etc. Okay, so these three equations here are the Einstein-Vlasov system. The main problem actually of the system is these field equations here. So everything which is hidden in this nice little short expression is actually pretty tough. Yes?
I don't know much about the system, more. But one of the important things about the standard for us equation is your space.
Yes. Yeah, this does too.
So even when you're stretching space coordinates.
Yeah, of course you have to use the correct volume. You have to measure the volume in the right way, namely using the metric here. So if you integrate this, I mean, if you take the covariant derivative of this guy, then this is zero. That's the conservation law. Okay, so similarly to Maxwell, you can split these equations into an evolution part and a constraint part, and the evolution part would be hyperbolic, would be of wave equation type, but nonlinear. And what I claim is that this is a good model to investigate formation of singularities and the questions concerning those singularities in general relativity. And the main point why this is true is actually something where I don't even have a transparency, because it's very simple. If you take the Newtonian limit of this system, you get the Vlasov-Poisson system. And not only on a formal level, this has really been proven. If you insert the speed of light everywhere where it belongs and then let it go to infinity, then the solutions will really converge to solutions of Vlasov-Poisson. And now we know that for Vlasov-Poisson, we have global existence of classical solutions and no singularities, no blow-up. So that means any singularity which you might encounter in this system is really going to be a truly relativistic geometric singularity and not some breakdown of your metamodel, which you're really not interested in, because you want to study, say, cosmic censorship. So if your metamodel breaks down before you ever get to the singularity, you don't know how to analyze that question. Now, Vlasov is not going to break down if the geometry behaves nicely, so therefore this is somehow a nice metamodel to work with. Okay, so of course this is good, sort of nice to say, but it should be backed up by some results. And I'm sorry to say that the results are now becoming fairly old, which means that they are known. The reason being that we haven't been able to make progress in the last years. So, yeah. Okay, so since this system is really pretty difficult to analyze, we now make simplifying assumptions like spherical symmetry. So spherical symmetry now for me simply means I can introduce coordinates such that the metric takes this form. So the metric components here depend only on time and the radial variable r. These r, theta, and phi are like polar coordinates in space. And on these spheres of fixed radius r, you just have the usual metric on a sphere. And I mean, the whole metric information is contained in these two functions. We want this to be asymptotically flat, which means just an isolated object in an otherwise empty universe, so that the metric, I mean, this should go to Minkowski, which means that lambda and mu should go to zero as r goes to infinity. And this condition of a regular center, yeah, I mean, if you don't make this, then the metric would actually blow up at zero. So the first theorem that we can prove under this symmetry assumption is just a local in time existence result. So for smooth, compactly supported data, there exists a solution which exists on such a time interval, provided the data are such that twice the mass within the radius r divided by r is less than 1. If you don't make this assumption, you simply cannot introduce such coordinates at t equals 0, and then you cannot even start. So you need to make this assumption in order to have this sort of coordinates to get the metric into this form. Now, in the same spirit as what Bob Glassy told you for Vlasov-Maxwell, if you can control the momentum support of F, then you can actually prove that the solution is global in these coordinates. So this is this famous result by Glassy-Strauss for Vlasov-Maxwell, holds in the same spirit here. The only thing that you have to control to get global existence is the support in momentum of the distribution function. And, well, this is then what you would like to do. It turns out so far we cannot do it analytically, but we have tried this numerically, and numerically, I mean, we have very, very clear results in the direction saying that the solutions are global here. First, we ran actually just numerical simulations based on a particle and cell scheme, and then later on, a PhD student and myself proved that the scheme converges. So this is, yeah. The scheme is not particularly inventive or anything. It's just particle and cell, but there's a rigorous convergence proof, which is something. Now this might sound a little bit surprising that the solutions are global here, because you would expect formation of some sort of space-time singularity if the density is high enough, and this seems to say, well, the solution does not form any singularity. But you have to remember that this time t is just the time coordinate, okay? And this time coordinate is actually the time which is measured by an observer who is infinitely far away. It's the proper time of an observer who is very far away from this object. So what this means, that this t is actually infinite, it just means that such an observer who is very far away is never going to see the singularity if it forms. So that's precisely cosmic censorship. If a singularity forms, it's sort of hidden in an event horizon, and an observer outside is just never going to see it. So if we could prove this really analytically, we would have proof in cosmic censorship, but I mean, yeah, we so far cannot prove it. I would also have some pictures, but I rather want to show you the theorems and not the pictures of these numerical simulations. I mean, now what we can prove so far on this asymptotically flat case are basically these two results. The first one says that if you are in the situation of this local existence result, and if you assume a priori that your mass density, now the spatial mass density, remains bounded in an arbitrary small neighborhood of zeros, basically at r equals zero it remains bounded, then the solution is going to be global. This is really in sharp contrast to other matter models, for example to this obnoxious dust, because there, if you have this dust matter model, which is a fluid with pressure zero, then if you are in a spherically symmetric situation, all the particles which sit on the same sphere will move with the same velocity, so those spheres will just move as a whole. They might move inward or outward. And then, of course, two such spheres might want to cross, and then you get a what's called a shell crossing singularity, which has nothing to do with any geometry to break down, it's just that your matter model breaks down, and you don't know how to extend the solution afterwards, even though the geometry stays perfectly nice at those shell crossing singularities. Now what this result tells you is that you're not going to have shell crossing singularities or anything of that kind here for Vlasov, because if you get a singularity, it's going to start at the origin and not somewhere away of it. And the second result, which I want to mention on this asymptotically flat case here, is really a global existence result, namely if the data are sufficiently small, in a sense which of course has to be made precise, then the solution is really geodesically complete. Now this is more than to say that T is infinite. Geodesically complete is really a geometric invariant way of saying that the solution is global, and it means that any geodesic, any trajectory of a particle, any light ray will exist for all proper time. So you never run into some sort of singularity which stops your life. And so the solution is really global. And again, this is in sharp contrast, for example, to this result of Christodoulou, because remember, he had these naked singularities even for arbitrary small data. Here, if you make the data sufficiently small, you don't get any singularities, not to speak of naked ones. Just no, as you expect. I mean, because if the density is sufficiently low, you're not expecting a black hole or any singularity to form. And that, I mean, to my knowledge, this is Vlasov is still the only matter model where you can prove such a result. So I actually have two transparencies to show you what the system looks like in these coordinates. Yeah, well, I also want to go to the cosmologic, okay. Okay, I still have some time? Okay. Okay, so just to see what you have to solve in this spherically symmetric asymptotically flat case. Ah, yeah, let me show you the whole thing. So it turns out, polar coordinates have this disadvantage that they introduce some sort of artificial singularity at r equals zero. So you want to avoid that and you use Cartesian coordinates instead. Then, of course, you have to explicitly demand that F is spherically symmetric in this sense, invariant under rotations. And then you don't use the canonical momenta corresponding to this x, but you use momentum coordinates which are made up in such a way that this zeroth component of the momentum has this nice expression in terms of the other components. Now if you do this, then the Einstein-Vlasov system becomes longer than it was before, but actually now it's much simpler because everything is written out. So this is just the Vlasov equation where the force acting on the particle is given by the time derivative of lambda, that's lambda dot, and the radial derivative of mu, the mu prime. These metric components, lambda and mu, obey these two first order ordinary differential equations with respect to the radial variable. So these highly nonlinear hyperbolic field equations somehow are reduced to these two because of the symmetry. And the source term in these field equations are obtained from F by just taking moments like these. So if you think of F being given at an initial state, well, then you can compute the rho and the p just by integration from that. You stick it in here, then you can compute the lambda and the mu from these equations. You stick it in here, and then you solve the velocity equation by the method of characteristics, and you can start to iterate this, for example, to get your solutions. But the system has certain bad properties. For example, if you look at those field equations, just ignore so the velocity equation, of course, is just solved by following the characteristics backward in time, so that ignore the first couple of lines. Now, if you have those source terms given, then you can simply integrate the first field equation, because there the left-hand side actually turns out to be a total derivative with respect to the radial variable, and you get this formula for your first metric component. E to the minus 2 lambda is 1 minus the mass within the ball of radius r divided by r. And then once you have this lambda, you can put it into the second field equation and explicitly solve for the mu prime, so it seems you have explicitly lambda and mu, and everything should be fine. But there's one problem here, there are two at least. First of all, this left-hand side by definition should better be positive, but there's nothing to ensure that this right-hand side remains positive. So if you want that, you have to assume it for the initial data. And that's this condition that twice the mass within the ball of radius r divided by r must be less than 1. You have to assume it initially, otherwise you can't even start. But then if you assume it initially, you have to somehow control it as time proceeds. And to control this lambda from this equation would be very unpleasant. But fortunately, the system which I wrote down is not the complete Einstein-Vlasov system. It's a reduced version which completely determines the solution. But there are other field equations like this one which hold if all the others hold. And this gives you explicitly the lambda dot in terms of another moment of F. And so this equation actually allows you to control the lambda instead of this bad-looking equation here. The other problem which you can see here is that these field equations don't have any regularizing effect, because, I mean, the mu prime and the lambda dot, those are your forces, and they are just as good and bad as these moments of F. There's no integration in space which would smooth it somehow. And this is really the true difficulty of the system, that there's nothing in these field equations which would give you smoothing or compactness or anything. The fields are just as good or bad as your source terms. Okay, somehow one can, to some degree, resolve these difficulties. And I, as my last transparency, I would now like to go into cosmological context, because this was one of the questions that I mentioned in the beginning also. So I now want to look at the cosmological situation where the space-time is not asymptotically flat, but you have some sort of boundary condition which closes the universe or whatever. And again, to deal with the problem, we have to assume some high degree of symmetry. Here it's this what we call hyperbolic symmetry. So if you look at this metric here, then this part now, remember this is no longer the sign as before, it's this hyperbolic sign. So this is actually the metric of a hyperbolic space, of a two-dimensional hyperbolic space, okay, which is the symmetry surface now in this case. So this is what's sometimes called an open universe, this hyperbolic case. And in this spatial variable psi here, the metric is supposed to be periodic, so we don't have any asymptotic flatness or anything like that. And if you look at this system, well, I should point out one further thing here. As you see, now the metric here explicitly depends on t, so at t equals 0, something seems to go wrong, because this just vanishes, and you might expect that at t equals 0, there's a singularity. Of course, this could be just due to bad choice of coordinates, or it could be a true singularity. That's the question. And it is actually the latter. So what one can prove as first result, if you go backward in time, so meaning you start at some positive time, say t equal 1, then if you look at initial data, you can formulate a certain explicit size restriction, which is not really a smallness condition, it's just saying the data have to satisfy a certain explicit condition, then the solution really exists all the way to t equals zero. So the meta model does not break down before you really get to the point that you want to analyze. That's the first step. And then if you have a solution which exists up to this t equals zero, you really have a true curvature singularity, a space-time singularity, or Big Bang, in the sense that this scalar object, which is the trace of the Riemann curvature tensor contracted with itself, so this is a scalar, therefore if this blows up in some coordinate system, it will blow up in any coordinate system, because it's a scalar, it doesn't transform. So here we really have, at t equals zero, we have not only a coordinate singularity, but really a true geometric singularity. And we want to go a little bit into the future, right? So, so if we go into the future, then we can actually show that, now this is fairly recent stuff, that for general data, the solution will exist for all future time, but again, you have to remember this time is coordinate time. And if the data satisfy a certain explicit smallness restriction, again, that then we not only get a global solution in this coordinate time, but we again get a geodesically complete solution, now complete in the forward direction. So that would mean that if I'm living in this universe, you know, my clock would run on forever and I would have plenty of time for the complete this talk. What I want to say is, to finish, is that this is really, I mean, this metric still has a high degree of symmetry, but it's by no means homogeneous or isotropic. So this is really much more general than those models by Friedman, Roberts, and Walker, and still you have the same structure, a Big Bang in the past and expansion towards the future in this hyperbolic symmetry. If you would take another symmetry, then you would have a big crunch at the end, etc. So you can prove certain things with Vlasov which you would not be able to prove with a different meta model, and that's all I wanted to say. Thank you for your attention.